Blog Talk Radio.
Gentlemen, this is the Eric Priest Show, live in Northern Virginia, brought to you by the Ren Rock Radio Network. We are back after a long hiatus, and it's good to be on the air again. That was Gary Schwartz off of his Return to Revel Grove album with a tune called Purple Unicorn. And for those who don't know, Revel Grove is the fictional town that comprises the Maryland Renaissance Festival. So E. Pilly's there. He's the organist if you go in there in the mornings. And when you're leaving, you hear the main pipes playing. That is him. He also performs throughout the village. So that's Gary Schwartz, good friend of mine. And today's going to be a show that's going to be focused on sports entertainment. And let's see, there's a lot going on. Oh, before I go into anything else, we do have some news that I saw today that I thought was quite amusing. I'm sure many of you know The Rock, a.k.a. Dwayne Johnson. In today's paper, he is the highest paid movie actor. That's amazing. I mean, he started off as a wrestler, and now he's the highest paid movie actor in America, possibly the world. I don't know. Could be more than that. But yeah, that's Dwayne Johnson, The Rock. I love his movies. He's surprised me. I was, back in the day, I was not a huge fan of his. I did watch him. Some of his matches I enjoyed. I never thought that he would turn out as hugely popular. When he started doing movies, I was like, well, you know, other wrestlers have done movies. One or two might be good, but you know, is it really going to work with Dwayne The Rock Johnson? Well, let me tell you, his movies are good. Most of the movies I've seen. Let's see. Walking Tall, the remake. I believe that was one. He's done a few remakes, I guess. I think he did Escape to Witch Mountain remake, but I haven't seen that one yet. So he's done some football movies. He's done some comedies. What else has he done? He did a movie with Marky Mark, Mark Wahlberg. That was a really good one. About the true story about something in Florida, and it was a scam, and he was part of it. And he was really hilarious in that. But yeah, lots of stuff here. Just waiting on our guest to call in. We are live. Let's see. What else has been going on as I wait? Maybe I'll play another tune. You know what? I'm going to play another tune and wait for my guest to call in. So let's see. That was a instrumental tune. Let me see if I can find something a little bit. This one's got some kick to it. This is Barley Juice off their Bonnie Prince Barley album with Weekend Irish. I'll be back in a few. Special guest today calling in, and for those of you that are familiar with the world of sports entertainment, or back in the 80s it was wrestling, our special guest today is Baby Doll, calling in I believe from North Carolina, I believe, but let me put her on the air real quick. Hello,
how are y'all?
Oh, good, good. This Baby Doll.
Yes.
Great, great. Glad you made it. Welcome to the Eric Priest Show, brought to you by the Red Rock Radio Network.
Well, glad to be here. And by the way, I'm from Texas, but I'm now living in North Carolina.
Yes, yes. Yeah, North Carolina is nice. I've been down there a few times. I've been to, I believe... President Polk has a property down there. You know, it's like Mount Vernon for President Washington. Polk, I think, is in North Carolina.
Right. It's over by between Charlotte and Rock Hill.
Okay. Yep, I went down there once. I remember one time when I went down there with my family, there was a, through the internet, I learned about a wrestling store that sold merchandise and stuff. So I got all excited, went down there, drove around everything, couldn't find the door, couldn't find the front door of the building. Turned out it
right.
was a mail order only place.
Oh, shoot, was that like Hot Spots at the time?
Yeah, yes, it might have been that, yes.
Right. Yeah, Hot Spots is quite an operation. I mean, you can buy everything from a wrestling ring to wrestling boots to masks to everything. It's quite an operation over there. They've got some really good guys working for that.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, I thought it was like a storefront property. You could just go in and buy something, but I quickly learned not.
Oh, man. So that might be a next stage. That might be something cool for them. Although they do go to, like, a lot of shows and set up, you know, like all their DVDs and shirts and things like that at a lot of the indie shows around here. So maybe if you're up and down the East Coast and can hit a high spot, your vendor, it's quite experienced. They've got a lot of stuff.
Oh, that's good to know, because I've seen their merchandise through the internet, and I would like to buy some of it. Definitely like to see what they have. They do a lot of, I guess, a lot of collections of wrestlers and stuff, like greatest hits DVDs and shirts. And,
right, and a lot of their, their shoot interviews. Tully and I did a shoot interview for them about 10 years ago, and it was a lot of fun. I mean, they're really good at the shooting interviews and things like that. So pretty much whatever everything I've gotten and everything that I've seen of what has come out have from High Spots has been pretty good quality, really.
Oh, good. That's good to know. I'll keep an eye open on that.
I would put them over. I know the owner, Mike. I know Jake and Caleb and all the guys that have worked for them and set up the rings for them. And for a wrestling operation, they're top-notch. I have to admit that they really do treat the guys really well, and their merchandise. I mean, you're going to get what you pay for.
Oh, well, that's good to know.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely keep an eye open. I would guess it's highspots.com would be their website.
That's right, I believe so. Yeah.
Okay.
I used to have a dog named High Spot, which is funny.
Oh, wow. That was just, I take it, just a coincidence?
I think just a coincidence, because I had my dog like in 85, 86. Oh, no, I had him in 90 and 91, so it was way before High Spot.
Ah, okay. Okay, well, I'd like to start off and talk a little bit about the life of Baby Doll prior to getting into the sport of wrestling.
Oh, wow.
So, tell me, what is Lubbock, Texas like? What kind of a town is that?
Lubbock. How about Lubbock?
Lubbock.
No, that's
okay.
Okay. A lot of people say that, so it's not any. And we're like in the middle of nowhere. If you look on the map of the state of Texas, it's up kind of in the rectangle part. We're 100 miles north of Amarillo, or 100 miles south of Amarillo. We're 300 plus miles northwest of Dallas, and we are approximately 300 miles east of Albuquerque. So we are literally in the middle of nowhere. It's farming and agriculture. We do a lot of cattle, a lot of cotton. It's a big medical complex out there in Lubbock. It's a real good place to grow up. We had a lot of migrant workers that came through, like with the cotton fields, and they were a good basis for our audience. My dad promoted wrestling there for over 20 years. We ran in the Fair Park Coliseum, and then in the next couple of years, and towards the end, we were at the Civic Center. But he ran Lubbock for over 20 years, and we ran every single week, except for Christmas week. For over 20 years, he ran Lubbock, and we ran out of the Amarillo office with Dory Funk Sr. was the head of that. So we had Dory Funk Jr. as our world champion. We had Terry Funk. We had Harley Race. Ric Flair came through when he was just starting out. Andre the Giant, Dusty Rhodes, Bobby Duncan, Ted DiBiase came out there whenever he was going to school at West Texas State and started his wrestling career out there. Lanny Poffo came out with his dad and wrestled for like the summer. The Hart boys would come down. Stu would send Brett and a couple of the other boys came down for two summers and traveled around with Dory and Terry. So it was really a perfect childhood for me because I really, really liked professional wrestling, whether my parents were in or not. And we got to see all the guys come through. And, you know, every week, you know, my dad was on TV, you know, promoting our shows. And then my mom and dad would go and work the shows on Wednesday nights. So it was like a really cool childhood. And then whenever my brother and I got old enough, we would, my brother worked the concessions and I got to sell programs, and we set up rings and chairs, and it was almost, I don't want to say like a carnival type atmosphere, but now that I look back at it, you know, we packed up a ring trailer and another trailer had 600 chairs, and we took like the show on the road. And not only did we run Lubbock every week, but then in the summertime, once or twice a month, the guys would come up and we would do what was called spot shows. We would run a show that was close to Lubbock, usually between 40 and 60 miles away, like La Mesa, Plainview, Snyder, Leveland, were all places that we went, and we would set up the shows there and run like maybe once a year and have just total sellouts. It was just crazy how many people we could get into a National Guard Armory or the Curry County Coliseum or places like that. So it was definitely a different childhood than most other kids would have.
Oh, wow. That's awesome. That sounds like a really fun childhood, especially with all those legends. And that's incredible. Did Rock and Robin ever go through there?
No, Robin just worked for the WWF. I believe that she did wrestle in Lubbock whenever she was working a program with Sherry, that they did, I think they did like a Dallas, Amarillo, Lubbock, and Albuquerque type run through there one time. So I don't think that she actually worked it like the way that I did, but she went through there, you know, working with WWF. Although she did come out for my wedding.
She came out for what?
Whenever Sam and I got married, we got married out in Texas. So I know she was out in Lubbock one time whenever I got married. Otherwise, I really don't know.
Oh, okay. It's after learning through the internet and other things about, you know, this time going on, who's really related to who, who's this and that. You know, I thought it was funny because I've always enjoyed you're one of my favorite valet wrestler divas, I guess, in the history of that I've watched. But one of my favorite female wrestler back in the 80s, believe it or not, was Rockin' Robin. I liked her.
She and I trained out at Nelson Royals one summer, and she worked very, very hard, and she just had that all-American girl look, and she really enjoyed, you know, the time that she got to be in the ring. She got to work with some really good girls, like with Moolah and Sherry. And for the time that she was in it, she was really, really good.
Yeah, I agree with that, because I'm originally, even though I'm in Virginia now, Northern Virginia, I'm from Massachusetts. And back then, all we got was WWF. That was it. There was no major cable companies or internet or YouTube or pretty much if you saw wrestling, it was about at least 90% was Vince and Vince Sr. what they were presenting.
Massachusetts, my aunt used to live in Groton, Connecticut, and then she was in Old Mystic.
Okay, I've heard of Old Mystic. I'm from Western Mass. Pittsfield is the last major city you hit before you hit New York State.
I got you. I've got cousins and stuff. I've got cousins and all through up through there. I haven't, not that we're very close, but I know I've got Francis and I can't remember the Francine and I can't remember the other one, but I do have relatives up through that way. And I know that my daughter is a really big Patriots fan.
Oh, yeah, that's a huge, huge area. Definitely with all the successes they've had in the past decade or so. It was a little bit of a struggle with Drew Bledsoe when he was our quarterback, because it didn't really take off till like his final season. And then
I got you.
But it's a nice town. It's the funny thing about it, a lot of people don't know this, unless they were from that region. We had the Navy information systems, so if we had ever gone to war with Russia, we were guaranteed to get bombed, which they reminded us at least once a month during school when we do the bomb shelter drills.
Yeah, we were out in the middle of nowhere. No one, no, No bomb could get to Lubbock, that's for sure. We were pretty safe. I think we still are.
Okay, just I'd like to go over just the family tree that you're aligned with, just so I have everything correct.
Okay.
From what I've read, you have two daughters with Sam.
Yes, Micah and Michaela. Micah is a musician, and she's like 25, and she does the Amplify radio shows and does concerts and pub shows around the Fayetteville area, and goes like Wilmington and Greensboro, and is quite into the music scene. And then my youngest daughter, Michaela, is 23, and she's a professional wrestler. She's been wrestling for, I believe, about 7 years now. And she's all up and down the East Coast, everywhere from, we did a show up in Rhode Island and Delaware, Maryland, Pennsylvania, I'm trying to think, Virginia, West Virginia, North and South Carolina. And I think she's got some stuff down in Georgia and Florida. She's working on going out to California and then really trying to work on getting a tour out to Japan. But she's my star. Both of them are my stars, that's for sure.
Okay, well, that's good. Yeah, I think she goes by the name Samantha Starr.
Yes, Samantha Starr.
Okay.
And she's, when you look at it with her, she's third generation. I mean, a lot of guys now, you know, they're bragging all second generation. She's actually a third generation. Both of her grandparents, both of her parents wrestled because of myself and Sam. Jake the Snake Roberts is her uncle. Walkin' Robin is her aunt. Aurelian Grizzly Smith is her grandfather. And then my parents, Nick Roberts and Lorraine Johnson, were also. So three out of four grandparents, both parents, an uncle and aunt. So it's almost as good as the Samoans.
Yeah, that is a pretty good family tree there. Definitely.
And especially with the girls, because how many girls have like a third generation girl wrestler? And that,
that's true.
Samantha's got them. Yeah.
I was thinking one day, I said, I was thinking the other day, I started to look at different wrestlers and stuff and their offspring and so forth. I thought maybe sometime they could do a four horsewomen. Because you've got Samantha Starr, there's Tesla Blanchard, I believe is Tully's daughter. Charlotte is Ric Flair's daughter.
Yes.
And, the only one, you could add Lacey to that. Maybe
like
that would be four.
They could be like the three fillies or something. Instead of the four horsemen, they could be the three fillies.
Yeah, there you go. Three fillies.
Yeah. I don't know. I think that they're all kind of doing their own thing. I it would be kind of cool if they eventually would do something together. That would be so awesome. I don't know if WWE would do something like that because they're not into doing like predictable angles and storylines. But you never know one day. And I know that Stephanie was disappointed one day because everybody has girls. You know, it's all these guys that have second generations. It's all these girls coming up. So it's a lot of girls for my girl to work against, and that means a lot of really good talent and a lot of good matches out there.
Oh, yes. Let's see. Now I'll go into the beginning of your career. I believe you started out unless you started somewhere else that I don't know about, in World Class Championship Wrestling, WCCW, and also in Texas.
Right. Now, that's actually where I got my start, except for, I mean, I worked for my dad, like, for almost 10 years, you know, with setups and concessions and everything like that. So I was behind the scene with that. But it wasn't until I'd actually heard my mom and dad talking that they were looking for a girl to work with Gino, because Gino was working the angle with Stella Mae and with Sunshine, and that they were looking as, like, a girl-type bodyguard type thing. That way he wouldn't have to lay his hands on the girl type thing, and one girl could go against another, and it would just provide for a different storyline. And they were talking about that, and I thought, wow, that's the spot I wanted. I had a huge crush on Gino, and I had taken my dad's black book. It had all the phone numbers in it, and went off to a boyfriend's house and used his phone to call the Dallas office. And David Manning answered the phone, and I gave him the spiel of like, well, you know, I kind of heard, you know, that you guys were looking for a girl for Gino, and, you know, what about me? You know, I'm smart and I'm pretty, and maybe I'd be like what you want. And David had told me that they were just getting ready to go to a meeting upstairs with Fritz, and that he would run it by him, and it sounded really good, but until it went by Fritz, he couldn't really say anything. So he called me back about like a half hour, 45 minutes later, and said that Fritz loved the idea and that they thought that it would be perfect, you know, for what they had in mind and what they wanted for Gino, and that the only problem was that he was going to tell my dad. And I told him that, well, since I was going to, it was my spot, that I should go ahead and tell him. And, of course, I was going to school. I was a college student and was going to actually EMT classes at the time. I had 2 weeks to go. I was in like the top three of my class, and it was like crunch time. It was like, am I going to follow through with this EMT thing, or am I going to go be a professional wrestler? And unfortunately, I broke my parents' heart, and I quit school, and I went off, and I packed up my car, and I went off to Dallas, and I worked with Gino and Jake and Chris Adams and that whole crew for, you know, a couple of months, and It just worked out. It clicked. The angle went over just really, really well. We worked a lot of sold out shows. I'm sorry. I got to work like the Cotton Bowl. I got to work Reunion Arena. They had Sunshine come back at the Cotton Bowl show and do the appearance out of the helicopter, and she looked great. I mean, she'd come out of rehab. She had lost a lot of weight. And then, of course, because Sunshine had been before I was, they were just going to continue back with her. And so Stella and I got our walk-in papers. We had two more shows in Miami and Tampa on Christmas Day and the day after. And so I went, yeah, it was just like, here I started the Sunday before Labor Day, which is really cool because that's coming up. The Sunday before Labor Day, I had started at the Dillon Harry Coliseum in San Antonio, and then the last matches I had scheduled with them were for Christmas, because after that I was done. And so I really didn't want to stop. Here I had quit school, and I didn't want to like have to start all over again just for like 3 months of like working, and I really liked working. And whenever I landed, I knew that Michael Hayes was booking down in Florida. So as soon as I landed and was headed to the building, I stopped at a liquor store and got like the biggest bottle of Jack Daniels I could find. It was almost a ridiculous size of Jack Daniels. And so I go up to meet Michael Hayes. I'm like, hey, how you doing? And, you know, I'm kind of looking for a place to go. These are my last shots, and maybe you could use me. And He apologized because they were getting ready to shut Florida down during the winter because it was a little bit slow. And he was just like, you know what? He said, over in the dressing room is Dusty Rhodes. And he's booking in Carolina. He just started booking there. And he said, he's getting ready to blow that place up, quote unquote. I remember to this day, he says, that place is getting ready to blow up. He said, that's where you want to go. He said, if you want to go anywhere, that's where you want to go. And then he took my bottle of Jack Daniels and left. So I went back over to see Dusty, and Tully's standing there with him. And I'd known Tully since I was probably 11, 12 years old, because Tully had also gone to school at West Texas State and had been a quarterback and had done like overnight radio on the weekends to help put himself through school. And He graduated from West Texas State, so on the weekends he had wrestled, and he had made some shows for my dad, you know, coming down to wrestle in Lubbock, because it was, you know, pretty much, it was like 80-mile trip for him. And so I'd known him, you know, since I was just, you know, like before I was a teenager. And whenever I saw him and Dusty standing there, I was kind of like, you know, I'm looking for a place to go. I gave him the same thing of, you know, like I really like working and I want to continue to wrestle and work and I'm looking for a place to go. And I didn't know that they were actually looking for a girl for Sully. And for the past couple of months before that, they had a contest that they were looking for the perfect man to be with Tully, someone to take care of them, you know, take care of Tully, to run the roads with them, to take care of his house, to take care of every need that Tully had. That was a girl that they were, quote, looking for. And I, whenever they saw me, Jesse just saw the perfect girl of what they were looking for. You know, so I went out and I had my match, and at one dressing room, Tully was standing there, and Dusty was standing there at the other one. Whenever I went to the ring, I looked over and saw him standing there, and I thought, you know, well, this is it. I got, you know, that this is whether I do or die. So I had a really good match with Stella, and I was walking back, and I looked back at the dressing rooms, and they're both standing there. And I knew that when they were both standing there, I had them, because they'd watched the whole match. They hadn't ducked out like halfway through. They hadn't ducked out. You know, they had stayed during the whole thing, and they were actually watching me walk back to the dressing room. And I knew at that point that I had captivated them, that I had that look, and that I was what they wanted. So this was like Christmas, and Dusty talked to me, and they were wanting to start me like the end of February. And then the end of February got to be like the middle of February, and then it got to be, well, when can you be here? And so I loaded up the car and I headed back and headed across the country, and we did the video with Tully where I came in on the Learjet. And that was like in January of 85, and it took off. It was just crazy after that. It really was. And then Tully and I worked together for about a year and a half before I switched to Dusty, but I mean, I'm so fortunate, because in my career I've been able to work with the very best of the best, from like Gino and Chris and Jake in Texas, and you know, like working with the Freebirds and the Von Erichs. I mean, you don't get any better in Texas wrestling than that crew. And then when I worked with Crockett, we started working out with Tully, and then I went with Dusty, and then I went back with Tully for a while, and then I went with Flair, and it was just, I mean, you don't get any better than that either. And then I came back for a little while and worked with Zbyszko, and, you know, he's WWE or WWF champion, and, you know, Western States champion there for CrossFit. So there was another time that I've just been so, so fortunate with the guys that they put me with, that I have been able to work with the very best.
Oh, yeah, definitely, because all the people you mentioned, they're considered by many to be the top, they give the top interviews and so forth, promos and so forth.
In my career, too, I believe that I took place in one of the best matches in wrestling history with the I Quit match with Tully against Magnum. I mean, the whole build-up for that match, the two guys really didn't like each other. Their matches were so believable up until like Starrcade, and then had the deal where Tully really didn't say I quit. You know, he said yes, but he did not say I quit, and that just gave to the whole argument. I mean, every piece fit together. I mean, from like fighting over the belt and fighting over me and fighting over who was best and who's the bigger man, and it was, every piece of the puzzle fit in that build up of that match.
Oh yeah, that's considered by many to be one of the top matches during that time period. Was the
Time period. I would put that match against any match in the history of wrestling, really, for the whole build up of it. So the heat that Tully had, the way that the fans backed up Magnum, the whole script, they weren't fighting over one thing, they were fighting over several things. So it was a whole gamut of it. It was one of the two times in wrestling where I think that people really actually believed the shit was real.
Yep. Yeah, Tully was always good at drawing a lot of heat. Fortunately, he spent most of his career as a heel, because he was just top notch at it. And
of course, I mean, well, he was kind of, I mean, I don't want to call someone a natural heel, but he just kind of had the way of just, he did awesome interviews. who was kind of like the snotty, bratty, you know, kid that you didn't like. He had Arn to back him up, you know, like he would instigate something and then Arn would have to cover for him, you know, like like the big brother type thing. So, you know, it was like Tully was poking somebody with a stick and then Arn would step in and go, okay, it ends now. And it was just the whole, no matter if Tully was working with Dino as a tag team partner or Arn or whether he was working singles matches, Tully always had one of the best matches on his card, no matter what.
Yeah, he was top. That was his goal. Well, I remember I moved from Massachusetts. We moved from Massachusetts to Delaware right as the NWA switched from Mid-Atlantic to Jim Crockett Promotions. The whole morphing of that. I know part of it might have gone to Georgia Championship Wrestling first. Then I get hazy back then. But I do know that when I first came to Delaware, I was getting Georgia Championship Wrestling. And then at some point, I started getting Jim Crockett Promotions Wrestling.
Right. Well, and, I believe, I can't remember. I think it was like maybe March or April of 85 is when Turner bought out Crockett, I think, and then or we started doing the I don't want to say that Turner didn't buy out Crockett. We started doing the TVs down in Atlanta, and that's when we kind of joined up forces with Turner, where we were on the Georgia Championship Wrestling. So we were doing 3 hours of TV on Saturday morning for the Georgia Championship Wrestling for the 2 hour show on Saturday night, and then the 1 hour show that they had on Sunday afternoon. And then Tuesdays we would do 2 to 3 hours for the Mid-Atlantic and for the worldwide show. So we were doing 5 hours of TV every week after, I guess it was March of 85. So there was a lot of TV. We were doing a lot of TV.
Oh, yeah. There was it was really good. I remember, for some reason, my rabbit ear TV, because I didn't have cable like a lot of people do when it first came out, so I'd pick up whatever I could. And I don't know where, but somewhere I started getting Southwest Championship Wrestling. And so I got to see the dynamic duo of Gino and Tully. So I knew about Tully even before he hit the Mid-Atlantic region. And I'd tell people, hey, just see them. And of course, they had cable or whatever, my friends. So they were more into Hogan or I guess back then it was the end of Backlund and or they would catch some other stuff like NWA. They obviously got, well, back then it was the Mid-Atlantic Georgia Championship Wrestling. But I would catch Southwest. And I just thought that Tully and Gino were they were my favorites. I love them. And all the crazy shenanigans that they would cause. And I did see Tully had one run where he was not a heel. And it was a small thing. I think it was the sheepherders attacked his dad or something. And he went to his dad's rescue.
Right. I kind of remember that. But see, we were more, my dad was working with the Von Erichs out of the Dallas office at the time rather than Southwest. And I'm kind of like you, where we didn't get, you know, like all the wrestling shows unless I remember I could get the Southwest Championship Wrestling show on one of the really far to the left AM stations on my radio. And this is how much of a wrestling fan I was, is that I would actually listen to the radio show out of my car at like 11 o'clock Sunday night just to listen to a wrestling show you know, on the radio. But I remember this is like so crazy is the times, you know, like my time on earth has just changed so much. I remember being like a young girl, like waiting until cable got in my neighborhood so I could actually watch Georgia Championship Wrestling. And then just a couple of years after that, then I'm actually on Georgia Championship Wrestling. And now with the internet thing going on, I mean, we never thought that any of this would be like what it is now. You know, like 30 years ago, we had no clue that people would be so crazy about, especially the Mid-Atlantic Wrestling, you know, that mid to early 90s run that we all had of just how good it was and how long it would stand time. And it's phenomenal because for me to have like the DVDs and the CDs and the whole thing of like I've been on people's shelves, you know, like for the past 30 years, and then to meet them and see it in their face of like how much they enjoyed, you know, like the time that they spent with me, even though I wasn't there, I was, and it's crazy, you know, to think of like how much everything has changed.
Oh yeah,
because we didn't have internet back then. We didn't have GPS. There was nothing like what it is now. There's nothing like it.
Oh no, nope. I remember those days. I got a lot of the territories I got out of the wrestling magazines that Apter put out, or whoever else, Wrestling Eye, all the ones Apter did. Yeah, yep.
Yeah, Apter and Napolitano were the two magazine guys. And you know what's crazy now is that there's really no. I mean, I guess there's still like Pro Wrestling Illustrated is one of the new, you know, one of those tried and true magazines that's still out there if you can still find it. And WWE mm-hmm. has their magazine. There's a new one. Brian Hardy started a magazine up there in Maryland, and it looks really, really good. But it's crazy that you don't have the wrestling magazines like what you remember how you could go into 7-Eleven or a convenience store and there'd be like 8 to 10 magazines that you could stand there and look through and it'd have all the pictures and all the territories and all the stuff. And it's, you know, that's another way of how it's changed. I mean, where have all the wrestling magazines gone?
Yeah, we used to get our posters out of them and so forth. Wrestling Eye had like 4 or 5 pages in the middle. And there was Sports Review, Inside Wrestling, Wrestling Classics. And but yeah, that's how I learned about territories. I never lived in a region where there was Mid-South. I could never get Mid-South wrestling. That drove me nuts. But
you just WWE just put up that collection then that has like Dog and DiBiase and Jake on the cover. That's a really good DVD. Plus then you've got all the YouTube stuff and everything. It's definitely different. I mean it's from oh my gosh, like you had DiBiase, you had Hacksaw Jim Duggan, you had Junkyard Dog, Coco Ware, Bill Watts was like one of the main promoters, Jim Ross got his start down there, Jake got his start, Magnum started in Mid-South, Mid-South, I think Mid-South is very under, I mean, Mid-Atlantic's good, I think Mid-South was underrated because like what you said, it didn't reach out to people. It was very central located, and it didn't, like, get its product out. It seemed like it was almost like it didn't want to get out of the Mid-South area. Like, it didn't want to expand, and it could have done really well if it had.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I know what you mean, because there's some territories you just didn't see. I mean, I remember I never got Florida. When I moved to Delaware, I'd watch Georgia Championship Wrestling, and I kept hearing about Dusty Rhodes. I just missed his WWF run, the early one. And I'd heard about him, seen pictures of him battling superstar Billy Graham in Florida and Humperdinck and all those guys.
Oh, yeah.
And Kevin Sullivan with his army, like with Locke, Fallen Angel, and Mark Lewin, Purple Haze, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
But I'd never seen any of it. You know, there's no way. But then one time, I kept hearing about Dusty Rhodes. I'm like, man, am I ever going to see this guy? And one day, Gordon Solie broke away to an interview with, maybe he was at one of his runs as NWA champion. And there was Dusty. I was like, oh, finally.
Okay.
Yeah. Now I can spend 8 hours a day looking at Dusty clips if I want to.
Exactly. Well, and then wasn't it cool, like, if you were like I am, like back then, if you traveled somewhere, like we went to Minnesota to see my mom's family, and then we went like to Georgia and things. You know, like when I was a young kid, I would always hope that I was there on the weekend, because then I could go to the TV stations and find the wrestling show, because there's always a wrestling show somewhere on a Saturday afternoon. And like if you went to like Wisconsin, you could turn in, like if you were at the hotel, you could hopefully find like the wrestling show on Saturday afternoon. And it was cool to go to like the different places just to see like the different. It was different, you know. It was just so cool to see what they had to offer. That was like one of my childhood like adventures. Was always if we got to go somewhere to find out what wrestling show was on, so I could watch it to see who was on it.
Okay. I just want to let everybody know this is the Eric Priest Show live out of Northern Virginia, brought to you by the Ren Rock Radio Network. Today, our special guest is wrestling legend Baby Doll. And I like to try something that I've done before with other guests. I have a thing that I call name tag. And what that is I'll mention a name, and if you have any stories, any funny memories, anything at all, if you got nothing, you know, you can just pass. But if you have any kind of memories you might have of this person or time with them or whatever, feel free to share them.
Okay.
The first section of name tag would be out west in Texas. So I would say Von Erichs, any of them. If you have any memories with any of the Von Erichs, even the fake ones.
Well, there's not really that. I mean, I grew up with, I was in high school whenever Carrie and Kevin and David were coming through. Carrie actually helped me tweak my discus throwing skills to where I actually set high school record whenever I was a senior in high school. Whenever they used to come through, they would come in like on Wednesday and then stay Wednesday night, and then they'd fly out or drive out Thursday. We would go to the gym a lot, and I'd play them in racquetball, and I would beat the Von Erichs in racquetball. And Kevin was even saying the other day, well, it was a while back, to my girls about, like, what a good athlete I was, because I'd take them to the gym and I'd beat them in racquetball.
Oh, wow. That's cool. Yeah. I was a tetherball champion once.
Okay.
Let's see. All right, how about Gino Hernandez, the handsome half-breed?
Handsome half-breed. Let me see. I had a crush on him since I was about 11 or 12 years old, maybe 12 or 13. He was poor, working in Texas and being a heel, to have as much heat as he did, to continually get beat by the Von Erichs. When you think about it, the Von Erichs always won. And for him to have as long as a career as he did, and for him to have as much heat as he did, I mean, it just goes to show what a good worker he was. And one of the regrets that I have is that I never got to see him as a horseman. I think he would have been perfect in a horseman role.
Definitely. Most people agree with that. When I saw him, then I saw what Tully ended up turning into with the other horsemen, I said, oh, man, Gino would have fit in this he would have been a perfect fit. He had the look,
and I think,
the talk.
And I feel very sorry, too, because of the circumstances of his death, you know, that he had with the overdose and just the shady things of, like, what all the reports of, like, you know, the gambling and drugs and things that he had gotten into that had completely overwhelmed him. I thought that was really sad, you know, because I don't think that anyone deserves to die, you know, the way that he did, I think, because I think it was a forced overdose, but I don't think it was quite what the police had put down. The one thing I do want to do is Jeannie Clark, Lady Blossom, has a book. I'm definitely going to buy her book, because out of everyone, I think that she's got, like, one of the coolest stories, you know, to have been with, like, Chris and Gino and Steve at that time. That's one of the things on my to-do list. I definitely want to get her book.
Oh, yes. I'm glad to hear she has one. I definitely will look into that as well.
I saw her at the Fan Fest in August, and she looks great. I mean, what a really sweet, nice person. We kind of met in the hallway, and I kind of talked with her for a moment, and I had no idea that she lived next door to Gino whenever he had passed away, so I kind of want to get her book and read, you know, read the other side, you know.
Oh, cool. Yeah, me too. I'm going to look for it, definitely.
I think you can go on her Facebook. I think on Jeannie Clark, you can get it.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good to know. Yeah, last year I made a trip to Delaware just to meet J.J. Dillon. So he was on my bucket list. I wanted to meet him. And he was in the ECWA out of Newark, Delaware. He was a special guest manager for the night or something. He was managing one of the young bucks that they got down there. And I got to talk with him during the show. And he said that he wrestled Gino once.
JJ had wrestled quite a bit whenever he was in Texas. But he was James Morrison then. And he is one of the guys that, when you look at his pictures from like 1970 to like now, he has never changed. I swear to God, I think Jim Dillon is a vampire. If you look, he has not changed at all. No, not at all.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this was, this would be 2015. The summer of 2015, I went to Delaware. And it was like I was back in 1987. He was ringside doing his usual commotions. And I'm like, my God, he really is a vampire.
In a good way. In a good way. He doesn't look like the stick with the dark, solid eyes. He has not changed. And just one of the nicest men. I've worked with him in several offices because he worked in Amarillo territory for quite a while. You know, he had come down and worked for my dad's town. And then I had worked with him quite a bit when he was in the Crockett office, and just a really good guy. I can't say anything bad about him. And actually, he and Klondike Bill are banned from the Big Texan Steakhouse in Amarillo, the one that you can eat the 72-ounce steak, because they eat it like twice. And then I guess once you eat it like twice, you're banned. You cannot eat it eat again. He actually ate that 72-ounce steak more than once.
Oh, my God. Well, that's interesting. Yeah, he's really cool. I met his son, too, when he was there. He had his son ringside for the whole night.
Oh, how cool. I saw where he had a graduation picture on his Facebook. Mm-hmm. That was really cool. Yes.
Yep. Okay, let's see. Another name for you. Gentleman Chris Adams.
Chris Adams. Oh, my gosh. Not a good guy when he drank. And, it was just one of those things, one of his weaknesses. Otherwise, just a really, really sweet guy. He had come to Texas whenever he had just come from England. I got to drive him around. And, you know, when you're like 16, 17 and studying Shakespeare, and a young Englishman comes over and has the accent and everything, for me, he always was, as they said, a gentleman. But I've heard stories and I've seen the aftermath of, you know, whenever he did drink, and it was just a sad. And he's another sad story of like how his life ended. That's just tragic. It's tragic.
Yes, yes. I think his roommate killed him or something. If I remember correctly.
I'm not sure. I've heard several reports, and it was just from what I had heard, it was so senseless. You know, that I guess that's the only way to put it. It was senseless.
Okay, let's see. Next up would be Jake the Snake Roberts.
Let me see, Jake. Jake actually, we started in World Class in Dallas the very same day. He actually, my very first day starting out in the wrestling on like the other side of the curtain, starting like in the ring working, he held the door open for me, literally, to the TV studio. He held the door open for me in that part of my wrestling career. Whenever we had to go do promos for the Dallas office, we both kind of arrived at the studio together, and we just kind of struck off and hit it off as friends. He had just gotten married to his wife Cheryl down in Corpus, and she was down there and he was up there in Texas, and he just kind of needed someone kind of cool to hang out with that wasn't going to cause a lot of drama. And we were like instant friends, like from the very start, and he taught me a lot about the business. I mean, I'm like one of the very first people that he actually showed how to do the DDT. We had a really good run there in Dallas, and that gave him, I gave him something, you know, to work off him in the ring of kind of a deviant, you know, kind of marauder type, you know, just the evil Jake. And it was funny because everyone thought that, like, we were brother and sister because he had chosen the name Jake Roberts. Well, my actual name is Nicola Roberts. His name is Aurelian Smith. And so the cool story about Jake is he was working up in Michigan, up in Detroit for the Sheik. And he had just started out wrestling. And the Sheik was actually coming and making shots down in Texas to work against the Super Destroyer. And they were having some fantastic sellout crowds. I mean, it was crazy business what the Sheik was bringing in, working against Art Nelson, the Super Destroyer. And the Sheik had gone back up to Michigan and was telling about how successful it was. And he was talking about my dad, because my dad would actually had trucked in sand. You know, had put sand around the ring one time, you know, for an Arabian death match, you know, actually had sand. And then my dad rented a snake every week that it was a big boa constrictor. And I called him Captain Punch, but I would actually go down to the ring and the Sheik would put the snake in the bag and then I'd carry the snake in the bag back. And so the Sheik was actually talking about how cool the promotion was, you know, that my dad was got the snake and the whole thing. So Jake is going, Jake the Snake Robert. So he took Robert from my dad's name and the snake that the Sheik was using and just tied it all in together. And then almost like 4 years later, we meet up and the whole thing just, it just worked. So it's kind of a roundabout story. So I thought that was really cool that he'd gotten my name from my dad and then, and up until that time, I never met my dad.
Oh, cool. Yeah, that's neat.
I know,
that's... Yeah, so things go full circle. That sure became a gimmick for him once he hit WWF.
Oh, yeah.
That was it. And I've got his DVD, so I've heard some of the stories he had. I think one of the stories is one time a snake went in the shower and wrapped itself around the hot bar, and it scolded him. He went flying all across the room, and wrestlers dove out of the bathroom like crazy. He's
well,
had some experiences.
Jake would travel with a snake. Well, underneath the plane and traveling, it gets really, really cold. So he'd have to, once he got to the building, he would have to put the snake in the hot shower to revive him, to bring him back up to temperature. I don't know how many snakes the snake went through, because that was really rough on him. When you think, I don't think flying is good for a tropical snake. He did go through quite a few of them, but the ones he did have, the ones they really liked, he took care of, and then he did the deal with the cobra and the whole thing. Traveling with a snake was not as much fun as you would think it was.
Oh, no, I'm sure. Okay, let's see. How about announcer Mark Lawrence?
Oh, my gosh. I had not thought about him in forever. He was, it was like a perfect spot, you know, like with the Texas, you know, he wasn't a Texan. He wasn't a wrestler. He was a character unto himself. And, whatever happened to him, I have no idea.
No, I don't know. But he used to start off, I remember seeing him as like a ring announcer. Wasn't there an older gentleman that was the main announcer for a while?
You know, Bill Mercer was with him.
Bill Mercer.
Bill Mercer.
That's
was with him. And Mark Lawrence,
yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they were. That was quite a team. That was good. I mean, you've got David Crockett and Tony Schiavone, and you've got Bill Mercer and Mark Lawrence. Oh, my goodness.
Mm-hmm.
That's
were good.
That's cool. Yeah.
If you look at Southwest, it was Steve Stacks and the Hispanic guy, Ruben Rodriguez.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I remember Steve Stacks. Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, Lord. Oh, my gosh. Okay.
Some names you don't hear very often.
No,
okay,
how about
the original Fabulous Freebirds? Michael Hayes, Terry Gordy, and Buddy Roberts?
Oh my gosh, this is so cool, because my boyfriend and I, he's got a 14th Street Glide, and we've got like our little soundtrack of music that we ride by. And too, whenever Freebirds come on, it's funny because the song gets about probably 8 minutes into the tune, and then we'll go, and Michael Hayes just hit the ring, because it's just it's like the perfect entrance music. And Michael Hayes had that slow strut, and when you think of like how much people hated him and the Cowboys that would just take pot shots at him, and he and Terry Gordy and Buddy Roberts, they were like the perfect combination to go against any combination of the Von Erichs. Because if you had Kerry, Kevin, and David, you could do six mans out of that. You could do tags out of that. You could do singles out of that. It was just a perfect combination there for about 3 to 5 years in Texas. And I'm very fortunate. I got to actually work some shows with Michael, work outside of the ring with him, and work some mixed tags with him. And Michael Hayes was the one that told me to go talk to Dusty, so I am forever indebted to him for that. And then I'm forever indebted to him because he made my dad a lot of money, you know, and that the guys were, you know, out in Texas, it wasn't a hard territory, but it wasn't easy either because the trips were really long, a lot of 300- and 400-mile trips. Whenever they would fly into Lubbock, it was funny because whenever they flew in, my dad made sure that I was at the airport to pick them up immediately. There wasn't any like lollygagging around, because if they made it to the bar, it was going to be a while before he made it to the building, because they would actually like pile the money up that they had in the middle of the table, and they drank until the money was gone. So you might be there a while waiting for them to get back to the building. But
oh wow.
Terry Gordy just, oh my gosh, he was wrestling in Texas, and it was actually at the Sportatorium whenever I had started, and I was up in, they had what was called the cage at the Sportatorium, more like the wives and the girlfriends got to sit. So I was up there. This was right before I had started with WCCW. I'd done promos that morning. I was going to go do TV that night, and I think I was going to make my debut, I think, in Fort Worth that Monday. So Jake was wrestling, so I'd gone to the matches with him, and I was sitting up in the cage, and there's this girl up there talking about Terry Gordy this and Terry Gordy that, and how much she just loves Terry Gordy, and that Terry's going to buy her this, and Terry said that he was going to do this, and Terry was going to take her on this trip, and it was just Terry. So we're like, oh, my gosh, who is this girl? And so Terry Gordy comes up the stairs, and he's going to talk to this girl, and then all of a sudden his face goes just sheet white. The lady that's sitting to me on my other side is his wife. The girl that was talking the whole time was his, like, girlfriend from Georgia that he had been with for just a couple of months, and his wife had heard that he had had a girlfriend and that she might want to go check it out. And that she had sat up there the whole time and had taken notes of, like, dates and times and places and all of this girl that had said whatever she was going to do. And then Terry Gordy comes up there and sees his wife and has no idea that his wife has been sitting up there for the past 2 hours with his girlfriend.
Oh, boy. That must have been a long night for him.
Oh, you know what? A long lifetime, because I think the wife divorced him, and then the girlfriend, actually, they got together, and I think that's the mom of the kid that was working with the little blonde kid that worked with Luke Gallows when they did the deal, when they rang the bell, and he came to life, and he did the wrestling thing. This was back in, like, 2005, 2006, maybe. I can't remember.
Okay.
But yeah, that's Terry Gordy's kid.
Oh yeah, I think I've seen there's a Gordy on the independent circuit who's supposed to be his son, if it's legit.
It probably is a little blonde. Well, I don't want to say a little. He's a real good looking blonde headed kid.
Uh huh. Yep. Okay. Let's see. When you're out in Texas, it was probably a Devastation Incorporated out there with Skandor Akbar.
Yep, Gandhar Akbar, One Man Gang, and The Missing Link, I believe, was in that.
Yep. Yeah, my favorite of them was Gorgeous Gary Young. I always liked him. I thought he'd be a good horseman, too.
No.
No.
No. No.
No, okay.
Gary Young, he's a super guy, but no. I no. That's all I can say. And he'll understand why. Yeah.
Okay. Let's see.
You know that he's complete. He's on my Facebook now, and he's like completely bald. He's like Jimmy Garvin. I don't know what happened to those guys.
I know. Yeah, I've seen Jimmy. He's completely bald.
Yep. And happy, and it's crazy because with all the hair and the stuff back then, it was just you would have never thought. Never thought.
No. Especially Jimmy Garvin.
Jimmy's. I'm playing for. Oh, I'm trying to think if we. I think Delta, but I'm not sure. He's out of Charlotte here.
Okay. And just so everybody knows, this is the Eric Priest Show live in Northern Virginia, brought to you by the Ren Rock Radio Network. Our special guest today is wrestling legend Baby Doll, and it's been a nice discussing a lot of these names that you only see on YouTube searches nowadays. But yeah, I have a question for you that I forgot to ask earlier. When you were in with Gino, weren't you pegged as the Andrea, the lady giant?
Yeah. Yeah,
Who came up with that moniker?
It was the Dallas office. It was the girl that they wanted to have with Gino was like a big bodyguard type. They wanted her to be like over 6 foot tall, over 200 pounds, just this mean, like Mad Max type girl. And, I'm like 5'10", like 190, 200 at the time. And it was a stretch. I mean, I wore heels and walked like real big and strong. And, you know, to most females, I mean, I tower over them. And a lot of the indie guys now, I tower over them. But back then, if I wear heels, I'm like a legit 6'2", sometimes 6'3". And, it just depends on, like, what clothes you wear. And they wanted the bodyguard, like the big girl type thing. So, I mean, who's bigger than Andre? You know, there's not. So they did me as Andrea, the lady giant. And I didn't really... I mean, I have to admit, I didn't like it because, number one, Andre's my friend, and I thought it was disrespectful to him because there should be no other Andre, no matter, there just shouldn't be. And and then being a girl, Andre's this big, hulking giant of a man. I'm a girl. I want to be somewhat pretty and feminine of sorts, and being Andrea, the lady giant, is not at all feminine or pretty in any sense of the word. And so I didn't like it for that sense. I mean, I like my name Nicola. It's unique, and then especially like with Baby Doll. I mean, who wouldn't want to be called Baby Doll? So it all fit. And at the time, I really didn't like it, and I didn't find very many autographs with Andrea. I just thought it was disrespectful to Andre. Period.
Yeah, I can understand that, and I would probably agree with you on that.
And there's another girl using the name after I used it first, so that's even worse.
Yeah, I saw that because I did a search on Andrea the Giant, thinking I would just find you, and I found somebody else, too.
Well, I know it, okay, I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, but, I've seen her working for a big girl. I mean, she did work a little snugger, but I was just very disappointed. I mean, if you're going to call yourself Andrea the Lady Giant, at least work better than what I saw at the time. Maybe she just had a bad day.
As I was searching around YouTube, there is a two-part video featuring you. And actually, it's something that you and I have in common. It was a appearance on a local TV show called AM Philadelphia.
Oh, well, I remember that. I do.
Yeah, that's
we
on there.
Like, Lenny Zabisco was there, and the referee, I can't remember his name because he's gone. And there was
Dick
Flair.
Dick
Worley, that was it.
Yep.
And Tully and myself. Yeah, that was, it was crazy because we had worked, I believe, I can't remember. We worked somewhere like really late the night before. It might have been Philadelphia. And then had that show, and it really was literally, we stayed up. We, from the night before to that morning, yeah, we had not slept. And if you'll notice, my makeup and my hair looks really good because I hadn't changed it. It was the same from the night before. So, and then we had that day, and then we had, like, another interview, and then we had to work that night in Baltimore. It was just crazy. It was.
Oh, wow.
But it was good. It was.
Yeah, the reason I thought.
Really,
okay.
I was just saying, I really liked working in Philadelphia and Baltimore, especially Philadelphia, because they really, they liked the heels. They loved us. And it was like one of the first towns that you walked out on that you really felt like your work was respected rather than everybody cheering the Rock and Roll Express and Magnum and Dusty and all the girls and all this stuff. And it was, you know, just, it was easy to get heat that way. It was harder to get heat when they already loved you. And that was a talent that I think we always went above and beyond it. They just loved us more.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the reason I say that we have it in common is somehow I got to be in the studio audience for one of the episodes of AM Philadelphia. I don't remember how. I must have rode in or called in or something. And next thing I knew,
oh, wow.
I was in there for the day. I remember seeing the host, and I was amazed at how short he was. Because on TV, he looks all tall and everything. And I sat there and said, man, this guy is small.
Well, and then he's always sitting down, too, so you never can really tell.
Yep.
How, you know, it's TV has its own perception sometimes.
Oh, yeah. Yep, I spent some time in Philly. Since I lived in Delaware, you know, there's not a lot.
Hello? I know, right? Hello? I don't know if I should call back. I'm going to call you back. Hello? I cannot hear you. I'm not muted. Hello? If it's not me, I'm not muted. I've got a speaker and extra volume on it. It's not muted. Look, all this stuff is up. You can call me.
Hello? Hello?
347-498-00. Hello? Hello? Did I break the internet? I broke the internet.
Hello? Hey. Hello?
Same number.
Hello? Hello? It's something with their thing, because it's, I mean, even this is doing it.